Gano Swagwego. That means, hello everyone. Iswatundage. You are all listening to CIUT Wadranota. You're listening to CIUT Radio 89.5 Nikantro. It is placed at the frequency of 89.5.
And we're back. It is Taylor Report. Phil Conlon is here. we think we're going to reach Justin Bahunga. I'll tell you what this is about. Victoire Ingabire, for our listeners may know, is a prominent political activist on behalf of the Rwandan people. She has tried to bring a truly democratic order to Rwanda by challenging the one-man power of the country led by Paul Kagame. Paul Kagame does not tolerate opposition. And she, Victoire Ingabire, was living abroad at the time of the war and massacres of 1994. And she has been imprisoned because she returned thinking that, after all, she was not one who was engaged in any way in 1994. They tend to criminalize people who were there. They're subject to criminalization. In the case of Victoire, she was living abroad, but she did exercise her right as a Rwandan to return. She engaged in politics, and very quickly she was, I would say, framed and imprisoned. But the man who knows is Justin Bahunga, and I think he's on the line. Are you there, Justin?
I'm there, thank you, Phil. How are you?
Very well. Sorry it took us a moment to get to you. But now, and I'm going to tell people that you're with the Democratic Forces, the Union of Democratic Forces. Is that right?
Correct, yes.
Yeah. Now, and this matter, people can find it, by the way, at fdu-rwanda.com to be up to date. Go to that site, fdu-rwanda.com.
Correct.
Your site has been reporting that there was a rather sinister development in the case of Victoire, and it seems to have now perhaps changed. But tell us what has been occurring with Victoire Ingabire.
Thank you very much, Phil. As you know, when Victoire Ingabire was imprisoned, she was put in a solitary confinement in a cell, which cell they even blackened the windows, make us don't see light of the day, and should have somebody to watch on her in her room. But then she managed, while she was in prison, to write a book, and which she was entitled was Between the Four Walls of 1930 Prison in Kigali. We are furious. So she was taken out of the room and put in a public ward with other ladies. And this ward has about 800 ladies. And, of course, with little facilities, laying down in very harsh conditions. Now, recently, they were moved to another prison. And then to this prison, they put her in again, back in the room. But even before that, when she was with the 800, they had asked and what prevented anyone talking to her. Mm-hmm. She was there, but nobody would talk to her because they were being threatened. So when now she was put in this, again in a private room, they would put another person in the room. But this person they put there was very threatening to her, insulting her, harassing her, and not even hiding that she could even strangle her.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we had information. I won't say where I get it from, but we have got our own sources. She could be working for the DMI, which is the Directorate of Military Intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we sent this statement, and I would like to thank you and many others, the situation had changed, and this lady has been moved out of her room. But probably, we suspect, they might send another one, or she's watched over day and night. And but we hope this time round she not be so threatening.
Mm-hmm.
So her life is out of danger for the moment now, as you can see. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, we're really glad to get that news. And by the way, we should remind everyone, she's a very prominent and really extraordinary opposition to Paul Kagame. She is a nonviolent person. She's a one who has advocated a true reconciliation of the people and argued for a true representative system.
Absolutely.
And for this, she's treated as a criminal. But, of course,
absolutely.
As you mentioned, at one point she's in a place where there are 800 other women. There are thousands of prisoners in Rwanda who have actually frankly share her innocence but are regarded for one reason or another by the government as someone who's got to be taken off the streets.
Absolutely right. I think one thing I think I want you to talk about, as what you said, is she's a very extraordinary lady and very representative in the sense, as we were saying, an embodiment of the suffering of the people, and has moral authority, very high moral authority. But also, as you know, many, if you are a Hutu, which she is,
mm-hmm.
you would be accused of planning genocide, minimizing genocide, or having genocide ideology. So it so happened that when this event, tragic event, happened in 1994, she was not in Rwanda. Mm-hmm. So that makes her a bit safer. But at the same time, what I can say, how do I say, is that when she left Rwanda, she said, we can't just fight injustices when you are outside in ivory towers in Europe.
Yes.
You have to go on the ground and live the life of the ordinary people. And therefore, she left a luxury life in Europe where she had a good job.
She was a Dutch citizen.
She left her family
mm-hmm.
and to live with ordinary people. So that is something that actually is extraordinary. But
yes.
This happens when many people either are going out for greener pastures or are running away from political persecution. That gives her a very strong position if you compare to other politicians or anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole thing, actually, again, what you are saying is possibly true, is she breaks with the past in the sense that she was never actively involved in the politics before 1994, but also she's a person who is non-partisan in terms of ethnicity, in terms of regions, everybody knows, and she has friends from all,
mm-hmm.
all tribes. And that's why I think some people don't mention, even her lawyers, you know, a lawyer is probably your best person or confidant. Her Rwandan lawyer, the one who, the member was with Peter Elinda, who, mm-hmm. who actually for fear left. But the other one, Gatera, he's a Tutsi.
Mm-hmm.
So it shows you
yeah.
that if you had any confidant, you wouldn't be, if it was not somebody who has got beyond this ethnic politics,
well, this
you don't have that person.
This is the remarkable situation. By the way, we're speaking to Justin Bahunga of the United Democratic Forces, FDU-Rwanda.com. And, of course, there's another woman and her mother, Diane Wigara, and her mother, who are Tutsi, and they also have come under the hammer of Paul Kagame. And so, Justin, we are in a situation where we actually have a new generation of resistance, which is not sectarian. Is that right?
Absolutely right. That actually makes it, again, when you look at the politics of Rwanda, how it's changing and how the base of the legitimacy of the present government is crumbling, is that it was very easy at the beginning, and this has been the case, to say anyone who claims power wants now to revive the genocide ideology and Hutus. Mm-hmm. So then this is something that fortunately is crumbling, because when you see Diane, this is a lady whose family members, relatives, died in the genocide against Tutsi, but also whose father was a funder, a very financial donor to the RPF. And he was killed in an accident, which the family says and believes it was managed, it was done by the government, because he didn't want to be involved or to have shares of his business go into the ruling party venture, which is the Crystal Ventures. So that's a real challenge to the government. And then if you add on, again, when you speak of the power base, that those even who came with the president from Uganda, who helped him to get to power, former chief of staff, the former chief of intelligence, are now in exile, and one was killed. So the again, this group, which is the core group which came with him, is lost. So he's losing now the base of the Hutus, was actually almost accepted that either they are killers or they are onlookers, and that all they are refugees because they are fearing to be prosecuted. So you have now the base from Uganda with going, and now the survivors of genocide on actually gave a sense of legitimacy to the system are now also being arrested.
The circle seems to be closing on President Kagame. Number of enemies and particularly inner circle people has grown. It's quite dramatic. I want to ask you about a matter. I heard Ann Garrison of KPFA speaking with David Himbara about an element of the crisis that Kagame is creating for himself. He has begun to close churches and some mosques. Do you have any information about that? Can you say something about that? Why?
Yes, my feel about it is that, you know, in Rwanda, and it is, many people, they have nowhere to express their grievances or their pain and suffering. And where for many people, and you have seen it among, even outside, among the refugee communities, when we see the whole world crumbling, they normally go to church where they can think they can at least talk to someone or to somebody, that someone becomes God, to express themselves and to say they are suffering, to feel they can get hope to survive. So in Rwanda, again, because of the situation, depression, poverty, that's where people go. But then this becomes a threat to the government, which wants to control everything. So this is the area where they cannot control. Instead, they can't control them. And they can't control them there, saying there are problems which the government doesn't want to happen. So, and the church leaders, and some of them are people who were at one time, again, in the system, and they don't know how the system works. And therefore, the government is very cautious and very frightful about what happened to churches. And there are so many.
Yes.
And to have the resources to go and monitor each one becomes a problem.
Yes. So I recall. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
So I think the quickest way is to close them.
Yes.
That's what I suspect.
Yes. He's had trouble. We know he had prominent American evangelists who came there, and he liked that, and he allowed them to function, and because they all praised him. However, he seems to have developed some problems, probably because reality asserts itself, as you describe. We're speaking to Justin Bahunga, by the way, and it's fdu-rwanda.com for the information. It is the United Democratic Forces. Now, there's another dramatic news that I'm hearing, and I'd like to know your views on it. Apparently, there is some armed resistance or rebellion developing. Can you tell us anything about it?
Yes, I have heard, as you do, there is a group who has claimed to have now resorted or decided, having exhausted all the means, to use armed means to remove this government.
Mm-hmm.
And that group is made up of a coalition of three political parties, political movements. One of it is called MLCD, which actually they call this new movement coalition of three parties. They call it MLCD.
Mm-hmm.
And this Mouvement Rwandais pour le Changement Démocratique, Rwandan Movement for Democratic Change,
mm-hmm.
which is composed of three political movements. The one of them is called IPDM Ihumure, Parti pour la Démocratie au Rwanda, Party for Democracy in Rwanda. And the second one is called the Conseil National pour le Renouveau et la Démocratie au Rwanda, Ubwiyunge,
mm-hmm.
which actually presented by a man called Irategeka Wilson. And by the way, this is the printer group from the FDLR. Now, then the third one, which is made by this, we hear with Sankara, who is a spokesperson mm-hmm. for this armed movement, is called Rwanda Revolutionary Movement.
Mm-hmm.
And what is very, again, which is very significant, I probably not because what happened, but who is leading it, is Sankara, who is a survivor of genocide, the Tutsi survivor of genocide. So you are having now, again, Diane, a Tutsi survivor of genocide who tries to challenge the system through peaceful means, mm-hmm. and she's in the jail. Now we're having another Tutsi survivor of genocide who is now leading, said to be leading, who claims to be leading an armed group to overthrow the government.
Mm-hmm.
So I won't go into the impact or magnitude of this attack or its moral values or its chances of winning. But what's given us to me is that this person claims to be representing this coalition is and especially who is head of this military wing, which is called Front National de Liberation, National Liberation Front,
mm-hmm.
is again a sort of genocide.
Mm-hmm.
Again, coming to the point of saying the base of the system.
Just to be clear, I want
to
make sure I understand. Mr. Sankara is Tutsi?
Yes, a Tutsi survived genocide. He survived genocide and he lost her family relatives. Yes, he is. Yes.
That is that's a striking development, I must say.
It is because
and this
now,
is and the locus of this is in the south of southern portion of Rwanda.
Yeah, on the border, I think it's on the border. It's a forest which goes border with the Burundi and the Democratic Republic of Congo. So, but they said they are not in that forest. So again, what I'm saying, my issue is not. Whether is the issue is that there is somebody who is now leading this front for national liberation, which is or the movement who claims to be, is again someone with the two survivors of genocide who is saying, "No, mm-hmm. I can't accept it." And he's saying very in his message much mm-hmm. stronger than Diane.
Uh-huh.
Diane was saying that he's opposed, he's fighting against the poverty, lack of freedom of expression, unemployment, forced disappearances, extrajudicial killings. But this young man is saying, he's going further, say that actually these people in the power of Kagame, they used the Tutsi, were used as a scapegoat or a step or a ladder to get to power. And even quoting some of the leading people in the ruling party who are saying that you cannot eat an omelette without breaking eggs. meaning yeah. actually
that's an American
that
proverb.
They were seen as eggs which are broken, get to power. Uh-huh. So these are very strong messages, very uh-huh. insightful messages to say about the system now.
Yeah. Well, it is a militarized society run by one narrow, powerful group. It's not surprising this kind of thing would occur, in my view.
Exactly.
It'd be absolutely predictable, just like the closing of churches, because people find that the only place that they can go and at least say, I'm tired, I'm hungry, I've been badly treated, and ask for spiritual help.
Exactly. And that's why I come back to say, actually, that's why how in Gabiri was saying nonviolence is a choice he made. He said, if we don't do that, what's going to happen is armed rebellion.
Yeah.
But as you remember, the preamble to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, it says, not to avoid rebellion against tyranny, we have to have the market system of government.
Yes.
So she was saying,
go ahead.
And so the high message was, unless we do this, we are encouraging people to resort to violence to unseat the undemocratic system.
Yeah.
But she's in jail for that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I mean, the solution to the problem is sitting in prison, the nonviolent political leader, Victoire Ingabire. And she
yeah.
represents not a violent threat. She represents, frankly, a democratic threat.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Exactly. And well, absolutely. And yeah. You are absolute. You can't be more right.
Yeah.
And so it's a big threat because and that's the language people want. People have seen war. They don't want any more war. They know how people have died. But the government is closing that avenue that was being preached by Ingabire and opt for just violence. Now they're buying arms everywhere. You see, they are buying arms from China, from Russia. Now they are buying for the West. Now they are turning to the East to buy more arms. And while people are starving, the money is being siphoned to go to buy more arms.
Yeah. Not the smartest solution.
It is not. It's not at all. It was, and what is a problem is that the donors are aiding violence in the sense that they are giving aid, first of all, which helps the government to save money to spend on arms and on repressive machinery.
Mm-hmm.
And so indirectly, they are aiding violence in Rwanda.
Yes. That's.
And I was saying in terms of arms, not because they're making a difference, that the East or West, whatever they can get arms, they go and buy. It used to be the West you're supplying, but now it is turning also to the East, to the China, to Russia,
yeah.
to get more arms.
Yeah, that's where we come in. We have to speak up and tell the authorities here to quit being donors, quit propping up this government, and
yes,
release Victoire Ingabire and Diane Wigara and all the other political prisoners. Justin, we thank you very, very much. FDU-Nkingi. FDU-Rwanda.com.
Correct, yes.
And it's been very informative, and we're very grateful, and we will talk to you again soon. We hope to catch up on how this story is going to unfold. Thank you very, very much, Justin.
Thank you so much. I'm very grateful, Phil. Thank you so much.
Sure thing. Bye-bye.